Many in our listening audience may not be aware that the founder of Black History Month, Carter G. Woodson, went to Madison County's own Berea College and graduated with a degree in 1903. This kind of legacy that has roots in the Commonwealth is important for all of us to know, especially during Black History Month.
The Freedom Center celebrates Black History Month all 365 days of the year, but because of the special denotation of Black History Month for February, we're excited to gear off our programs with some exhibits.
After MLK Day, we actually get a lot of inquiries of as far as the content that we can provide. Then we also have people come in for our wonderful programs and exhibits.
On this week's Eastern Standard, Black History Month. We're interested in hearing from you right now at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. You can post a comment to the Facebook page or the website, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. And this week we're focusing on the topic of Black History Month. That happens every year in February, and every year organizations, groups pull together events that are focused on the issues of African-American culture and history. And a lot of these organizations are working year-round, and we certainly want to know about those activities and events year-round, and we certainly want to make sure that we are acknowledging those kinds of activities year-round. But let's take an hour right now, focus specifically on this topic. And actually, I'm told that our region has had an influence on the overall observance of Black history across the nation and the world. So with us on today's program, in the studio, first up, I have with me Dr. Alistine Turley. Alistine, if you don't mind my calling you by your first name, is director of the Carter G. Woodson Center at Berea College and associate professor of African and African American Studies at Berea. Alistine, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Good to meet you, and good to have you here in person, and also good to have with us on Skype this morning from Cincinnati are Ashley Jordan and Christopher Miller of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, and I'm hearing some a strange sound on the line there. I hope you guys can hear us. You guys there, Ashley and Christopher, you there?
Yes, we are. Can you hear us?
Okay, excellent. Yes, absolutely. Sounds a little better when you guys are talking. I guess we were hearing, I don't know, the air movement in your room or so. Chris Miller is the voice we've just heard, Manager of Program Initiatives at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the station with you.
And also Ashley Jordan, curator at the Freedom Center involved in, I guess, what curators do, putting these kinds of events and activities together. And I assume, in addition to what's going on right now, looking forward to future activities and events. Ashley, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start off our program with this very fascinating fact that I have just learned recently, the fact that a graduate of Berea College was the originator of Black History Month. Dr. Alistine Turley, tell us about that.
Well, certainly, and thank you for mentioning Carter G. Woodson, the founder of Black History Month, something that we are now celebrating across the nation that started simply as a week of celebration. Carter G. Woodson, we're very proud to say, was a 1903 Berea College graduate and, of course, went on to Chicago and Harvard to gain his Ph.D. in literature. So we're very happy to claim him as a Berea College alum.
Where is he, a native of Kentucky?
He is a native of West Virginia. He came out of a coal mining background in West Virginia. Huntington is where he was a principal of schools before he came to Berea.
I mean, Berea has long had a history of encouraging of folks who would not have access to an education to get one, a long history. I guess they were involved in the, at least in supporting the Underground Railroad and abolition activities?
Well, certainly our founder, Reverend John Gregg Fee, was one of Kentucky's best known, lifelong abolitionists. He never abandoned his cause of freedom for African Americans and liberty for African Americans, and certainly education, as he saw that as a very important way and a very important platform from which to engage in a discussion about freedom and liberty and being an American citizen. So, yes, our founder from his very beginnings incorporated the concept of education. An educated electorate is what the American democracy is based upon, and it's certainly inclusive of all people that we bring inside our borders, and Fee was very relevant in making sure African Americans were part of that.
As a professor, a teacher at Berea College, African and African American studies, what are you teaching? Are you teaching Black history, or are you teaching deeper subjects than just the events and activities?
Well, I hope I'm teaching deeper subjects. And at Berea College, we have required courses. So I teach in general studies and African American women's studies. Those are all Appalachian studies. These are all things that we want our students to be aware of. So I teach courses on that. I teach courses in political science and general studies, literature, English, all those things that we feel are important in a liberal arts education.
Do you think or do you observe today's students being interested in such matters?
Not at all.
Seriously?
No students. Generally, I think in our country, we've played down the importance of history, the importance of arts, importance of liberal education in general. So I think it's always a struggle. And truly, based on how we've taught history in the past, I think students often find it uninteresting, especially if they don't see parallels in our life today. So we're constantly trying to show that things we're doing today are really not new. And sometimes history can provide us with a great roadmap as to how we should be acting as citizens.
How do you make it interesting and compelling to the students? Do you play upon current events and activities and current issues?
We certainly do that. And fortunately, I'm at Berea, so we are history personified. Mm-hmm. We've had 165 years of being involved in these types of political, economic, and social issues. So even upon our campus, there's a great deal that we can draw upon as examples and models of how change has occurred, whether it was done peacefully or whether it was done through very radical actions. So, of course, taking people to sites. Kentucky, unfortunately, I don't think appreciates its history. We have many sites that people come to visit from all over the world that involve world leaders. We have, you mentioned the Underground Railroad. Of course, Kentucky is a key element of that story. You really couldn't reach freedom very easily without coming through the state of Kentucky.
And just on the other side of the Ohio River, within sight of Kentucky, are our other guests who are on Skype this morning, Ashley Jordan and Chris Miller of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Folks, one of you chime in. Tell me about the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. For those listeners, you know, the three of them who may not know about it, and your mission and what you're doing up there all the time.
Well, we sit right here on the banks of the Ohio River. Our mission is to reveal the stories of freedom heroes from the Underground Railroad era to contemporary times to challenge and inspire everyone to take courageous steps for freedom today. And so we definitely embrace the concept of connecting history of the past with the present. History is always current. What is going on today is contingent on what happened 5 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 300 years ago. History always remains current.
Ashley?
Yes. I mean, Chris summed it up so well, but that is our mission here at the Freedom Center, just to be a beacon for history topics as well as contemporary topics. But I wanted to talk a little bit about our exhibits. Right now we have an exhibit called Crowns, African American Women and Their Crowns. It's called Faith and Fashion. Basically, this exhibit looks at the historical narrative of African American women on Sundays and the fact that they were able to use this day as a time to break away from their domestic roles. And we definitely will be championing that this February, as well as our Picture Freedom competition, where we had a national competition. We picked 12 finalists, and those children will speak to what freedom means to them.
And Ashley and Chris, let's talk about what I was just asking Alistine. an interest from young people in terms of African American history, the issues of freedom and human rights that have been issues for the entire history of this nation and, of course, many nations in the world. How do you feel about young people and their interests? I'm sure, and I know your facility often has big yellow buses parked outside it.
You are correct.
They unload, hundreds of young people every year, thousands.
Well, as a public history institution, we are always challenged with making coming up with ways to impact the youth and making our exhibits and our programs engaging. For example, we have the Rosa Parks experience, which is a virtual reality experience, and it is geared towards capturing the imagination of individuals today with the technology, using modern day technology in order to educate people about a little bit of what Rosa Parks went through. And so that is an innovative way of how we try to connect people with the history of the past by using modern technology.
Tell me about that. I mean, I'm fascinated to hear about that. What kind of experience will people have? You say virtual reality. Did they get to ride on the bus as Rosa Parks did?
Well, we actually have modified bus seats, which actually has some. They will have some movement to it, but there's a head unit that those attendees will put onto their head, and wherever which way they turn up, they look up, they look to the side, they look down. They will see the inside of the bus as if they are there on the bus as Rosa Parks was at that time period.
Wow. I mean, is there an element there that gives them the experience? I'm sure it's impossible, but to give them a hint of the experience of what Rosa Parks and other African Americans of that era would have experienced.
Yes, because it places you in the first person point of view of Rosa Parks. You are Rosa Parks when you sit down in the seat. And you get to, like, feel your seat kind of, like, push. It, like, vibrates to give you that sensation that you're being, you know, pushed out of your seat. And then you also get to hear the background noises, or at least the voices of those who are yelling racial epithets at you to get out of your seat. So it definitely gives you that first-person account to what that day was like for her back in March. Or, excuse me, back in December of 1955. Yes.
Wow. Fascinating. And I know, I mean, you know, the Freedom Center has, I assume you still have the slave cabin, and you have elements inside the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center that allow people, even those of us who are not African-American, to go in to empathize and to feel some of what might have been experienced by people over the years.
Absolutely. And it's important to note that it is a part of the American narrative. Slavery is part of the American native narrative. The fight for freedom is a part of the American narrative. And so we embrace the ideas of inclusive freedom. And this is something for all of us to learn from, regardless if you are African-American or not. If you live in this country, it is your responsibility to have an understanding of how did we get to where we are today.
And that's where we want to go with the rest of today's program. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, talking about Black History Month. Christopher Miller, Ashley Jordan, Alistine Turley, our guest. You're welcome to join us. 800-621-8890. Send an email, weku.easternstandard@gmail.com. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. Black History Month is our topic on this week's program. We want to go deeper than just celebrating, observing Black History Month. We want to talk about Black history, and we're interested in hearing from you. What do you want to know about Black history? And what are the issues that are on your mind as we come to this month of the year? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST. And we'll try to keep our eyes on the social media and acknowledge your comments or questions. And, of course, we'd be glad to hear your voice when you call 800-621-8890. With us for this week's show, Ashley Jordan and Chris Miller of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, joining us by Skype. Dr. Alistine Turley, director of the Carter G. Woodson Center and associate professor of African American and African Studies at Berea College. And we're really glad to have these folks with us as resources so we can talk about topics such as Black History Month and more deeply into Black history. Let me ask each of you, and we'll start with Alistine because you're right here in the studio. Why Black History Month? How do you feel about Black History Month? I've heard people say, you and the media, and I've experienced this over many, many years, you and the media every year, February, call a black person, and we'll talk about black history. And I've heard people say, you know, why don't you do this all year long? I think public radio does a little bit better job than a lot of other media, but what is the value of this observance every year?
Well, for me, of course, the value of the observance is the fact that people have to recognize that America was formed by many people, not just Europeans, and that fortunately we had a leader like Carter G. Woodson who was able to, and it's important for people to realize it was quite a struggle for him to even be recognized for a week. I mean, we celebrate a month now, but I think it's always the hope that the introduction of the week led to the formation of the month, that we will continue to see African-American history in all aspects of American life from January through December. I mean, there are always ways that we can expand on it. And I also think it's important for people to realize how many human rights movements have African-American history has been the roadmap for many other groups, women, immigrants who have used the black experience in America to form their own way of fighting for civil rights. And this continues today. Many of the tactics that were developed in order to gain inclusion in American society, many others have used in their own cause for inclusion. So for me, that's the importance of it.
Chris and Ashley from the Underground Railroad Freedom Center, talk about the success of that facility. How long has it been open now? Is it 20 years or more?
No. We opened our doors in August of 2004.
Ah, okay.
And so we've been open for that duration to the public. We have seen millions of attendees and visitors from not only all over the country, but internationally as well.
Is your facility overall financially successful? I know it's a nonprofit organization. I mean, is it on a solid ground? Are local governments, our organizations, schools, the public supporting that operation and continuing to see a need for what you're doing?
Yes, we are in a good place. Attendance is up. We have the support of the community. So, yes, we are in good. We're in good standing.
Do you go through seasons of interest? I mean, is February a more active time? Is this your big season in terms of demand for your services?
It actually begins with MLK Day. Because we have, in recent years, we've been open to the public, free and open to the public during MLK Day. And sometimes it ends up being a full weekend. And so our visitation picks up from that standpoint, of course, through February and then May through August. During the summer months, we get a lot of family reunions that will come through for tourism. We will have national conventions that have come to the city, and we've played a major part in their experience of the visitors that are coming in from other states and from around the country in enhancing their experience here in Cincinnati.
This is Eastern Standard. Our show is an interactive program. Chris, did I interrupt you?
Oh, no.
We want to encourage listeners to be part of the show, to call in at 800-621-8890, send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, send a tweet if you choose, at WEKUEST. And again, we hope to acknowledge your messages no matter how they get in here. And even after the program is no longer live, we're live on Thursday mornings. The show repeats on Sunday evenings. If you're hearing the Sunday evening broadcast, post on the Facebook page of the WEKU website, and we're glad to encourage conversation and dialogue there. We have on the line a caller who I hope has been patient and staying with us. We're grateful if that is the case. Elizabeth from Berea. Thanks for calling, Elizabeth.
Yeah, hi. I'm just curious what your panelists see as the greatest challenge for the African-American community, given our current administration and Trump administration.
Well, I don't think for this is Alistine responding. I'm sorry if I'm jumping in ahead.
Hi,
but I'm just thinking for African-Americans, much of this, what we see happening in the country right now, we've got great experience with, so maybe we have gained some skill sets that others might be able to learn and appreciate from. I think that moving forward, African Americans need to become more invested in their communities and being aware of what's happening in the political environment. Before, a lot of these things were targeted toward African-Americans, of course, I'm thinking of Jim Crow, segregation, civil rights movement, and up until today's time. So in one respect, everybody's in the game now. Everyone is under attack at some level, whether they be immigrant, whether they be unemployed. So I just think going forward, this might have a silver lining in causing people to not only view the African-American history as separate from American history. I think we're all under the gun now.
Chris and Ashley, you able to chime in on that topic?
Yes. You know, history is useful, especially when it comes to our social development. The studying of social behavior of the past really resonates to how we behave currently. And so in having an understanding of the nuances of history and what has transpired over time to where we are right now, you're able to navigate through the climate and the environment that we have now. So history is a very viable tool that we can learn from, and so that we can continue to progress and to tap into the inclusive freedom that we desire, a freedom of equal measure, of equal portion. You know, that is something that we're still striving for collectively as citizens of the United States.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call. You took
us
into
thank you so much. I'm a recent Berea, transplant to Berea, and I really enjoy your program and the station.
Thank you so much for being part of our conversation today. We're going to go back to the phone in just a quick moment, but let me toss this out to our guests. I mean, some people would see this current presidency and last year's election and the whole situation around this election as a backlash to the 8 years of the Obama administration. And many people, of course, considered the Obama administration a movement forward in our culture. Many of us have lived many years and never expected or were never sure if we'd ever see an African-American president in office. How do you all react to the idea that this may be a backlash? Go ahead, Alistine. I hear crickets.
Okay, I'll jump in. Certainly, I think President Obama's administration was a little bit too much for many Americans who have a certain view of what it means to be an American, and we realize that. That's what made his presidency so historic. But I also think this is what happens when you don't quite understand American history. As a historian, I always like to take people back to the founding principles of America, which I'm not so sure everyone is quite clear on. So when we use phrases like America is a nation of immigrants, somehow when we don't teach this and people don't understand the formation of this country from Mexico to France to Spain to England to Africa, all creating what we view as an American society, I think we have lost our sense of what that civic responsibility looks like, and we've promoted a false image of American history that people are clinging to. So I would encourage everyone to become more familiar with our history and how we have promoted certain ideals that have been emulated around the world. I think it's very difficult now to try and go to retreat from those ideals. And that's the frightening part for me when we look at how our democracy has always been seen as forward moving and forward thinking. And so an idea of returning to some perfect moment in American history, which never really existed, can be very frightening for people.
I also think in response to the backlash that people within themselves have, I guess, got an internal activism about themselves. Like in response to the election, we had the Women's March. And that was amazing to see so many women still wanting to be active about their causes that mattered to them in issues of civil rights. And even now we have the immigration protests. I think this backlash caused a lot of people to just rebuild on their consciousness and to look towards things that, you know, matter towards, you know, American ideas, not to still champion the things that matter most, such as civil rights and equal liberties. So I think that that backlash caused an awakening for some people to get involved and take steps and to protest peacefully.
I agree. I think that's one of the very positive things. As I said, one of the silver linings from this is that people are now required to really get to understand who they are, what American ideals really are, and how far they are willing to go. Being involved in our government is essential if we call ourselves a democracy.
You are all three really involved in teaching history in one way or another. To what extent does teaching history reflect a viewpoint? Do you need to approach it from a viewpoint of a political position or a position on certain social issues, or is history objective like journalism is supposed to be?
I don't believe anything is objective. I believe we all bring our views. I think as a teaching professional, we all try to present different sides of the story. We all try to bring many voices to the table. I certainly do in my teaching. But that's also the beauty of history, is that there are things that have actually happened that we can look at and use as examples and show without a doubt, this is in the past. These are actions that everyone took. These were the results. I mean, that is not disputable. So how and why things happened, people can debate. But you certainly can't debate what happened as a result.
Well, yes, definitely here at our institution, we are a resource for the community, many different communities. We pride ourselves on being a museum of consciousness, an education center, a convener of dialogue, and a monument for freedom. And so what we want to do is we take the history and present the stories. I think that's what's very important. Sometimes, as intellectuals and scholars, sometimes we get bogged down with dates and timelines, to where we really need to focus in on the stories. Like, for instance, you know, one of our very first programs features is a documentary about the life and history of Paul Laurence Dunbar. And so many people don't know that, you know, he was one of our great national poets. He gained national recognition, and his parents were free slaves from Kentucky. And so Paul Laurence Dunbar symbolizes that hope and the dream of the of America's enslaved. And it's very important to have greater knowledge of these stories, because it's very impactful to all of us, regardless of our race, color, or creed.
I mean, I don't want to get too deep in today's conversation, but let's talk a little bit about the nature of racism. It seems like when I grew up as a young kid and when the civil rights movement was underway, racism was pretty obvious.
Correct.
There were people calling each other names, and there was a clear discrimination that racial minorities were unable to do certain things, be certain places at times. How do we see racism in our society today beyond some of the, you know, obvious kinds of things that might occur? Are there subtle elements of racism that we just, especially those of us who are of more of a Caucasian background, are just going to miss?
I think it's more complex, or let's say it was more complex. I think you do see things now that are a little bit more visible, things that we thought we have overcome is coming to the surface when it comes to race relations here in this country. But there were a lot of implicit biases. There were a lot of things that people weren't conscious of or just ignored, not being open to different perspectives, not being open to embracing our differences and understanding that although those differences, they do not outweigh what we have in common. And I think that is where, as public historians, you need to continue to educate. Yes, we've been divided because of differences, and we allow that to impact our social development. We allow that to impact our behavior. So how do we recondition ourselves so that we can act accordingly in a way that's going to improve our communities? And so you use history as a tool in order to do that, to heal and to reconcile with all the systemic and social issues that we deal with. Places.
That's Chris Miller at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Also on the line on Skype is Ashley Jordan. Ashley, you want to chime in on what Chris just said?
Yes, I think thinking to what Chris was talking about, a program that I thought was real powerful here was Islamophobia, where we brought together people to discuss phobias that people may feel against the Muslim community, but we had people from the Muslim community as the panel participants addressing the comments and the concerns in a peaceful manner. I think the importance of programs like that are to be facilitators for education, conversation, dialogue, reconciliation, and healing. Because I felt like that day of programming really, although it was a hard conversation, it was a needed conversation. And I think participants and visitors left with a better understanding of Muslim Americans in society today.
Sounds like that must have been a powerful program. We have with us Ashley Jordan and Chris Miller. We also have with us in the studio Dr. Alistine Turley from Berea College. And we're talking about Black History. Black History Month is February, and we're kicking it off with this conversation today. And Peter in Lexington, we hope that you're still on the line. Thank you for being patient with us. We're going to come back and talk to Peter from Lexington, who called 800-621-8890 to be part of our show. You're welcome to send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Send an email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your voice if you're if you're able to take the leap and do that. 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. February 2nd is the date of our live broadcast. Black History Month underway for 2017. The great James Brown helping us observe Black History Month here today. We could go into a whole conversation about music and arts and culture and their role. I mean, I'm a product of the 1950s and 60s and grew up with soul music and Soul Brother Number One and Motown and so forth. And I'm sure folks have opinions about how those things have had an influence in our society. I do want to get to Peter on the line from Lexington in a moment, but I want to get Alistine Turley in here to talk about this issue of racism that we've been discussing.
Well, certainly, I really agree with what Chris and Ashley have both commented on, but I think it's also important as citizens we need to understand why, what is the purpose of race? Why will it not go away? And how race has been used historically as a way to generate division and to make people feel afraid, as though one group is gaining over another group. It's a very useful tool. And I would say in the 50s and 60s, we had the ability, people did not feel constrained. They could come out and say exactly how they felt about different racial characters. But today's racism is a little bit more hidden and proper and ensconced within laws and rules that you have to wade through to really understand, which in many ways I think stops us from being able to have honest dialogues about how we really are feeling. So people are not open to the discussion.
I mean, it can be shocking to watch some old TV shows, movies, certainly the early radio shows that exhibited clear racial biases that no one could deny.
Right. Certainly, if you look at old advertising, if you look at old magazines, if you, as you pointed out, films, music, all those things, no one felt a need to hide how they felt. And all these were stereotypical ideas of someone, but that maybe they had never even met, but just assumed by the media and presentation of race that these things were true.
Let's get Peter on. I'm sorry for keeping you waiting so long. I hope you're still there, Peter, in Lexington. Thanks for calling. Are you there, Peter?
Oh, yes.
Good. Thanks. Thanks for being patient with us. We made you wait so long.
That's all right.
Go right ahead.
Are you ready? Am I ready?
You're on. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I just wanted to share something that happened to me about 50 years ago.
50 years ago? 50?
50.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm an old geezer, and I'm a white guy, too. I went to a whole bunch of colleges before I finally graduated. One of them was, at the time, Federal City College, which is now the University of D.C. I was the only white guy in the class. I never encountered any racism except for one professor who didn't like my race. But anyway, I was sitting there in class one day, and a black lady next to me leaned over and said, "How come you talk the way you do?" Which was rather surprising. And I said, "I don't know. What do you mean?" She said, "You don't talk the way the rest of us do. Why?" And I said, "Well, that's how I was taught to speak." My mother was an English teacher, and she was strict. So I said, "Oh, that's how I was taught to speak." And she looked at me, and she put her hand on my arm, and she said, "Well, every other white guy here tries to sound like us. It sounds so ridiculous. Thank you."
Wow. Interesting. It's talking about being real.
Right.
Yeah.
Being yourself.
So what?
It was a wonderful feeling.
What has that meant for you in your life? And it sounds like your background was such a diverse background that it has probably made you into a different kind of a person than you might have been otherwise.
I don't know that it did, because of my home environment. Racist behavior just was not tolerated. Hmm. I remember one, and this will explain a great deal. We lived in Miami. And my mother, who could be rather sharp, was shopping in one of the big shopping stores. And I, at that point, I was probably 4 or 5 years old. I got thirsty. I went over to the water fountain and got a drink of water. And the floor manager came over and blistered my mother for letting me drink at the colored fountain.
Wow. Something many people today don't know about or don't realize.
My surprise was that anybody would have the nerve to talk to my mother that way.
Mm, wow.
I mean, that's like asking for death. But she looked at him very carefully and very calmly and said, "Are you finished?" And he said, "Yes." And she said, "Good, we won't be coming back here." And she just opened her arms and dropped all of her packages on the floor.
My goodness. Wow. That's amazing. Peter, your stories are great, and we're really glad to have heard from you today on this week's Eastern Standard. Thank you so much for waiting and spending some time with us on the show. I want to open up the lines for others to get on board. I want to get our guests to react to Peter's comments as a Caucasian person and his experiences over the years. As we remind listeners, you can call in 800-621-8890. Let's start with Alistine. What do you think about Peter?
Well, of course, a lot of admiration for his mother to be that forward thinking, you know, during this time. And sometimes we do overlook the fact that quite a few white Americans participated in the civil rights movement and did not join in the popular idea of American society being segregated. This is, again, a recurring American theme. When I think of the founding of Berea College in 1855, we still had many whites in America who believed in this idea of human equality, and it's carrying on when we see the marches and on immigrants today. I mean, so it's an underlying American feeling. So I appreciate Peter's mother quite a bit.
Chris and Ashley?
Yeah. Just speaking to that comment from our last caller, basically this notion of the inclusive movement in the sense that there was a spirit of cooperation amongst the races and that people were concerned about equality for all. And I think that's important with trying to get certain actions done because the civil rights movement, in the sense it was trying to get equal access for African Americans, there was a cooperation amongst the races there, marching on the March of Selma, there on the March on Washington. So these movements are important, and they do have cooperation within the races to show that, you know, everybody was working together for equality for all.
And you can see that, especially when you really do a deep dive into the history and not look at it on the surface level, you're able to see those where races intersected. You know, talking about the founding members of the NAACP, they weren't all African American. When you look at as far as some of the speeches that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King gave, the one he gave on the steps of the Capitol in Montgomery, he mentioned and referred to those white brothers and sisters that marched with them, that bled as they did on the roads by being beaten with billy clubs. And so you will see those stories revealed when you dive into the history to where there was this level of cooperation between a select group of people among the races. And so it's very important that those stories are revealed so that we can have a better understanding of what we need to do today.
Chris Miller and Ashley Jordan of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center in Cincinnati and Dr. Alistine Turley of Berea College with us on this week's Eastern Standard talking about Black History Month. Still a few moments if you'd like to get on the line and talk with us at 800-621-8890. Let me toss out a question that I've heard asked by many persons, not African Americans. Why do Black people get a whole month for their history to observe? How come? And, you know, the question is often phrased, how come there's no White History Month?
Oh, really? How about the other 11? But yeah, I agree with them that I agree. Black history should not be restricted to just February. I'd like to see it 12 months out of the year. And I would like to see it taught more vigorously in our schools. And I think because unfortunately we like to separate Black history from American history. But there's no way you can speak of American history without including Black history. We are integral parts. We were here at this country's founding. We were here before America was America. So I think it's very important for everyone to understand that history. So let's not be exclusive. If you're going to teach history, let's teach it accurately and include not only African Americans, but Native Americans and all the other peoples of the world who made this place possible. So, yes, let's expand and make history much more inclusive all year round.
And I think it's unfortunate we haven't got to the point to where the contributions of African Americans into the development of America has made it into our educational system in the way that it needs to be. From a personal level, I have a daughter who attends high school, and she's taking a U.S. Honors History course. And on the syllabus, a U.S. Honors History course, there was no mention of enslavement. There was no mention of the Civil Rights Movement. And I questioned the teacher about that, and the teacher referred back to, well, we have to teach what is going to be on the curriculum for the test. And it's amazing to me that if you take a U.S. Honors History course on a high school level, that those enslavement and civil rights are not a highlighted topic in an honors U.S. history class. So therefore, there's a need for us to highlight the contributions with February. But here at our institution, Black history is 365 days for us. In my home with my children, it's 365 days. We want to encourage people to have that spirit to understand that this is part of the American narrative. It is not just 28 days out of the year.
But what has Black History Month done? You all see some accomplishments from the establishment of Black History Month. Has it served the purpose that Carter G. Woodson would have wanted it to have?
I certainly think it has served a purpose. We know more now than we ever knew. And as Chris pointed out, we're still having this political battle of how to make it part of the true academic teaching and not some sideshow that it's an elective. If you want to know it, you don't have to. So here we are now in 2017, and there are still people. I heard the president speaking yesterday, I believe, about Frederick Douglass and not really being able to fully, as popular as Frederick Douglass was, not to be able to fully understand that this man, who he was in terms of being America's first choice for a vice president as an African American, all of these important pieces of our history, everyone loses when we don't know it. That's what allows us to have this myopic view about what we think America was in terms of greatness. So I do think getting the political fight now is to make everyone part of the American story through the educational system.
Ashley and Chris, has Black History Month done what folks were hoping it would do?
Yes, I do believe that Black History Month has enabled people to see the achievements of African Americans in this country. And I do believe through this resurgence of miniseries such as Underground, new audiences are learning about what the Underground Railroad is. Mm-hmm. Blacks in Hollywood are being more visible in their role choices to show African Americans in different lights. I do believe even in areas of education, even though that is a struggle, I know our institution is very so much so with making those connections to local school groups here in the area to just make sure that there is this connection to the history and the present today, because we just have to keep these ongoing conversations going. That's like our mission, to be the vanguards for what Carter G. Woodson started. And most importantly, it's not that long ago. Black History Month was established in 1976 as a national holiday. So it's still very much so a time period where we can reach back, but it's not that far back. So it's important that we keep it going because we don't want to lose this, because we'll be like a tree without roots.
We're running out of time. I just want to ask you all in the couple of minutes we have remaining, and we'll start with Chris. How would you recommend people observe Black History Month? Got some suggestions, some ideas for people of all races?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we want to encourage people to come visit the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center.
I'm surprised you would say that.
That is an excellent way to spend your time, to have a greater understanding about African-American history. You can go come to one of our three programs, the film screening featuring the life and history of Paul Lawrence Dunbar, which we will have February 11th. We also have a fascinating program with Napoleon Maddox and talking about the life of the Millie and Christine McCoy sisters, who were conjoined twins and who were born into slavery. A very, very fascinating story that he is doing a stage performance, make it into a stage performance. And so he's here to talk. And we talk about impacting the youth. We have a African-American quiz bowl on February 25th, to where we are working with the Alpha Esquires, and where young people in the region are engaged into facts and details about African-American history.
Let me come back.
If you can't make it to the Freedom Center, I encourage people to pick up a book, you know, to read something. Do a Google search on someone. Use your electronic devices more so than to look at videos and to do all the things that a lot of young people do, but encourage them to actually use that device to look up something new that they don't know about.
Let me turn back to Alistine Turley, your suggestion for Black History Month.
Of course, Berea is Living History. We are there. Please visit our wonderful campus and our community. By all means, visit the Carter G. Woodson Center at Berea College. We have a speaker on today for our convocation who's talking about the Green Book, which was a very important aspect of African-American travel during the 1960s and 70s. So there's much we can do. There are many more resources available to people now than have ever been the case. So I would just encourage everyone to take advantage of that.
Alistine Turley, Chris Miller, Ashley Jordan, thank you all for being part of our program and helping us learn more about Black History Month and about Black history itself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. And it is here every Thursday morning live. The show repeats on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Our associate producers are Marissa Hempel and Noah Day. Technical director for our program is Brian Bartlett. We remind you that our program will be available as a podcast or for online listening as of this afternoon at some point, usually pretty early in the afternoon. We're always interested in hearing from you, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.